CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor from the surface of the planet Earth. We're staying right here to celebrate the 13th anniversary of Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman's website following commercial space's success. Your subscriptions and donations are most welcome because we're at the beginning of a transformation of outer space to private enterprise, monetization, and profit. Why? Because we can see everywhere that the best way to get into space is cheaper, faster, and more trustworthy than big space once upon a time. Bob begins the story with NOAA. NOAA is the very important agency that tracks everything from the oceans to the weather. However, it has a huge budget, and now it's gotten smart about its budget. Bob, a very good evening to you. Happy anniversary to Behind the Black. At a moment in time that we can remember the moon landing once upon a time by big space, NASA's greatest achievement, you tell me, between the 20th and 21st of July. Well, all these decades later, NASA's either out of money or should be, given the scale of its commitment to SLS and other boondoggle projects. But NOAA's gotten smart. Well, how so, Bob? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I'm not so sure NOAA's gotten smart. NOAA is kind of like being pushed in this direction because of its own failures. Remember, NASA over the last decade has slowly transitioned from being the builder and designer of rockets and spacecraft to the customer buying it from the private sector. And that's what makes things go cheap, because there's competition, private ownership, which means they can sell their products to others and make money. And so you get innovation and you get a lot more for the bang for the buck. NOAA has been resisting this transition for the last decade. It just doesn't really want to do it. It's been building its own weather satellites since the 60s, and it wants to continue to do so. The problem is that NOAA can't do it. Its weather satellites have, over the last three decades, gotten increasingly more expensive, over budget, and behind schedule, and then when they launch, they fail. They've had a few of those where they've spent $1 billion on a satellite to get it up in orbit, and then it fails almost immediately. And so they're kind of being forced to try to find private enterprise to provide them the weather data that they're supposed to provide to the American citizenry. And so this week they issued a contract to a small sat satellite company, Planet IQ, $60 million contract to provide them weather data from the company's planned constellation of 20 satellites. Now, Planet IQ only has two satellites in orbit at the moment. More is scheduled for launch in 24. But based on the success of those satellites, NOAA's issued this contract, which means Planet IQ now has funds to continue to build its satellite constellation. It has customers. NOAA is one of those customers, but others will be able to buy the data as well. And this is once again, NOAA's reluctantly transitioning to stop building its own satellites and hiring the private sector to do it. As this proceeds, you're going to get to see more weather satellites launched that will be more capable than anything NOAA ever did.
Smaller, faster, cheaper, and we're looking at competition in building satellites. Correct, Bob? One.
Oh, yes. Competition is everywhere, and that's, of course, what makes this go. We could talk about Starlink. Let's say Starlink has now gotten a license to go to Malaysia. They can now offer their services to Malaysia, most particularly aimed at the remote areas of Malaysia where there is no broadband service. As part of the deal to get the right to sell their product in Malaysia, SpaceX is going to begin to provide Starlink service to Malaysian schools and educational institutes as a trade-off. But this way they get to sell the product to the people in Malaysia, and everyone benefits from it. And SpaceX is competing with everybody else to get internet broadband and constant satellites into orbit.
And I mentioned to the Malaysian audience listening to this podcast or radio show, you're on Starlink right now. Works pretty good, doesn't it? Bob, we're going to the coolest story of the day, the week, the month. This is everything. A Viking cemetery found at a spaceport. Tell me the details.
Yes, in Great Britain, in Scotland in particular, there are two spaceports being built. One is called Sutherland Spaceport, and the other one's called Saxaford Spaceport. They've actually competing with each other for competition. And they both haven't yet launched yet, but they're both under construction, and they both hope to have their first launches sometime within the next 6 to 8 months. During construction at Saxaford, there might be British regulations requiring archaeology to check to see if you're building, to see if you find anything. And it turns out archaeologists discovered a Viking ritual cremation cemetery about 4,000 years old near the launch site at the Saxafort spaceport. The burnt bones were found inside an arc of large granite boulders set into pits in the ground. A small platform of white quartz pebbles was also discovered, which may have once been linked to a burial. Now the launches will go on. This is not going to interfere with the archaeology, but it's kind of cool that the construction revealed the archaeology, and this is great.
And a Viking spaceport is everything we need for merchandise. You know, all these spaceports, Bobs, are going to turn into tourist attractions in the balance of this century. And there'll be children showing up, you know, the Viking trail to rockets tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, think about this a minute. You know, if they start launching regularly at Saxafort, you've got a win-win. You can talk about archaeology, and you can talk about settling and colonizing the solar system. It's pretty cool.
We can also imagine the Vikings 4,000 years ago, hallucinating about someday we'll be able to fly while they're laid to rest. Chandrayaan 3, what is that, Bob?
Chandrayaan 3 is India's second attempt to land a rover on the moon near the South Pole. And it launched about, It launched a week ago. And it's now in the process of adjusting its orbit around the Earth, raising that orbit slightly each time so that at a certain point it's moving fast enough at its closest point to the Earth that they can fire the engines and head to the moon. And they've now completed their fourth engine burn in Earth orbit. Everything is moving well. If everything goes right, it will it'll go into lunar orbit and then attempt the landing on August 23rd next month. This is a somewhat slow approach to the moon, but you don't have to have big engines to do it, which means you can save money and have actually more payload going to the moon itself. So we'll see if they make it. They have a Vikram lander and then a rover called Pragyan. These are basically duplicates of the ones they tried to land in 2019 and failed, and we hope this time they succeed.
Another is India's story, Big India Space, is a static fire test of Gaganyaan. What is that?
Gaganyaan is ISRO, India's space agency's attempt to build a manned capsule, and they hope to have a manned mission in next year, but we probably it won't happen next year. But they're getting close, and one of the things they completely successfully did was do static fire engine tests of the propulsion system that will be used in Gaganyaan's service module. You know, every capsule, every manned spacecraft has a service module as well that carries with it supplies and fuel and engines and so forth. It's not where the astronauts stay, it supports the capsule where they do stay. And so ISRO, the Space Agency of India, has now successfully tested the full propulsion system that will be used on the service module for Gaganyaan. They have launch abort tests to do, and they're going to do an unmanned flight first, so they're moving forward, getting close to that job.
Bob, this is Big India Space, and you've long had affection for it, but it fell into it drifted during the pandemic. Is it returning to what you admired before?
As far as I'm concerned, any big space government program is not something I admire and never admire. However, I did think that they were reasonably successful in what they did. They are coming back to life after the Wuhan panic, but the most important thing that's going on in India is the pressure by the Modi government to transition from their big space ISRO government agency that runs and owns and builds everything to being a customer to buy the product from private sector. And the Modi government is pushing hard on that. And of course they're experiencing resistance within the bureaucracy and the agency, but they're moving in that direction.
My memory, Bob, is someone has hired them, a booster from India. Do I remember that correctly? Some company?
Yeah, remember, India's rockets, the ISRO rockets they make, they've always tried to make profit from their market share and sell them to others, and they've done that. And they continue to do that. They lost a lot of market share when they panicked because others didn't stop launching, and they did. So a lot of customers went to other products like SpaceX. And they're going to probably have trouble getting some of their customers back. And so that's one of the reasons it's an opportunity for the Modi government to switch to private sector competition, because ISRO itself is not no longer can claim it's making money for the government, because it's not. It doesn't have as many customers as it used to.
In complete necessary contrast, night and day, the Chinese space program, which is civilian military, has launched another rocket from its interior spaceport, dropping the booster on human beings. These two giant states are in competition and in contest in the Himalayas. They have military deployment. India is developing boosters, is developing a commercial space industry, if I understand correctly. China is brutal and indifferent to its own population because it's looking to be supreme in outer space with cruelty on Earth. I mention this because Bob records their launches, and they've had a number this year, I believe. And when they launch from that interior spaceport, Bob, do I say correctly, that booster comes back to Earth, they know not where?
They know where, approximately. They have two different interior spaceports, and one on a coast. They're trying to develop the coastal ones so they can use the interior ones less. But whenever they launch from those interior spaceports, the first and maybe second stages of the rocket will land on land, and almost invariably land in China. And they have made some attempts to control those landings a bit, not like SpaceX, but just a bit with parachutes and grid fins, but they haven't really completely successfully achieved that. So what they do is they indicate drop zones, but those drop zones are very close to habitable areas, and since it's a zone, they have had cases where these stages have dropped near habitable areas, very close to habitable areas, so close that locals end up videotaping the burning stage on the ground. Now, we don't know. They've done a good job in the last 6 years of shutting down any social media that might show us videos of that. We don't get any word when they land near habitable areas anymore, but there's a possibility with every single interior launch in China.
I wanted to underline this. When China launches a rocket, it falls to Earth, and we don't know the results. Bob just was very careful. They don't let us know the results. That's true for their Long March 5B as well. They don't know where it's coming down. They have an idea, roughly, but it could come down on people as well.
No, John, with the 5B, when that core stage gets into orbit, they have no idea where it's going to come down, except maybe 15 minutes before it finally descends. And it could hit anywhere on Earth. And that's a much worse situation than even the first stages, because the first stages at least crash in their own country. I'm not saying that's good, but at least they're not hurting other countries. But when they launch the 5B, Long March 5B, that core stage reaches orbit, but it's an unstable orbit. It's a big object. It'll hit the ground, and it's uncontrolled, so it can crash anywhere. And there's no way to predict where it'll go.
Back to responsible scientific endeavor. South Korea wants to build blocks out of lunar soil, simulated lunar soil. To what end, Bob?
Well, when you're on the moon and you want to build a colony, you're going to need building materials. And so if you can, without carrying concrete with you from Earth, which is heavy, if you can take lunar soil, the regolith, grind it up, and then use a microwave, this is what they did, use a microwave to solidify it into a building block, then you've got bricks, basically, to build your lunar base. And this is what the South Korean engineers did. They ground up simulated lunar soil, volcanic material that they thought kind of duplicated what the lunar soil would be like. And then they basically shaped it and put it into with some stimulants, and they put it into a microwave and turned it into solidified blocks. And this is just testing ways in which you can create materials from the in situ materials to build your colonies. It's a good idea. They're going to need it when we get to the moon, John.
Bob Zimmerman, 13th anniversary of Behind the Black. Your subscriptions and donations most appreciated. We're going exploring. I'm John Patrick.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.